practical bent is evident in the fact that EUNET is often the very first networking in a country. Can you tell me what that's like showing up in Algeria or Tunisia or some country and starting from scratch? What do you do? What do you do to get things moving?
Let me give you an example. In Bulgaria, we were working perhaps a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, at trying to find good contacts in the newly opened up Eastern European area. And, we started getting some mail from Danbo. It might have been a Fidonet site at the time. And we started getting some email, and Pete Beertema, who I mentioned before, our head of operations, was doing a fair amount of conversation across email with this Danbo guy, or whoever it was. And after a month or two, Pete said, well, look, we've got this guy Danbo out here in Bulgaria. He seems to be really bright. Why don't we just let him exchange email with us? So we hadn't had any such thing quite before this, but we declared him a cooperating site. What that means is we'll exchange email with him. We don't care who he is. Oh, as long as it's non-military. We don't handle military traffic. We want to stay completely outside of that domain.
And did you have any evidence this wasn't the Bulgarian secret police?
We don't have any evidence that anyone's not anything in particular. All we knew is that he wasn't going to exchange any data at a terrifyingly fast rate. And if he was the secret police, he'd probably have some expensive equipment, which he obviously didn't have. So we started exchanging data with him. We invited him to one of our next meetings. We sent Norman Hull, Europen's startup guy, from Ireland to fly to Bulgaria and have a meeting, which he did. We got a user group started straight away. And this wild man from Bulgaria, this absolutely brilliant networker by the name of Daniel Kalchev, shows up in one of our meetings with just amazing questions and ideas and where do I put my IP line and so on and so forth. In other words, he was way ahead of us. And so we now have an official site in Bulgaria. We exchange data with Digital Systems, which is this group that operates the network there, and it works quite well. We started out by doing UCP mail. I think today he's exchanging data via X25. Oh, and by the way, EUNET is a frequent user of X25. We were at one point a substantial user of ICSI, but we have moved on to other things since then. So we're using X25 in Bulgaria. And it's working quite well. We've had similar experiences in Hungary and in Yugoslavia, Czechoslovakia. Typically what we do, unlike Bulgaria, is we start out exchanging mail with some institute. And then after a year or two or three, as the mail exchange group in the institute grows to be bigger than the institute, which has happened in some cases, well, then they have to spin off and start an organization of some kind. And they follow whatever is the structure in the country in question. Usually what happens is a starting up network connects either directly to Amsterdam via dial-up. Again, Amsterdam is where we have our European NOC, or they connect via some intervening EUNET group. Now, the phone lease line costs in Europe are crazy enough so that almost essentially in Europe, once you cross a border, it doesn't matter how many borders you cross in Europe. It just becomes a pan-European connection. So frequently, it makes a lot of sense for a group, let's say, in country X, to connect to Amsterdam, even though there may be intervening nets in between. It doesn't save them any money, and it would just have intervening hops that aren't useful. But I have ranged a bit far afield.
No, that's fine.
On the startup question.
I understand that you actually once had a real job. You managed R&D for a large computer company. You worked on secure Unix implementations. Mm-hmm. How did you ever get into this position where you're going to places like Bulgaria and setting up national networks?
In 1989, I was working as a consultant for, among other people, Unix International and Harris Semiconductor. And I had been for years following the political situation in Eastern Europe, but particularly the works of Andrew Veschler in the New Yorker magazine as he reported on the situation with Solidarity. And I was enamored of the sophistication, the political sophistication of this group that was trying to create a new freedom in their country. And in 89, of course, things started to speed up quite a bit. And I was watching them very closely while doing all this consulting work in Florida and New York. And at one point, I was standing with my friend David Eisenman in his kitchen during the winter. And it was, I think, December 11th or 13th, 1989. And the Berlin Wall had just fallen. And the Velvet Revolution, I think, was either in midstream or in start. And Poland had opened up tremendously with the Solidarity government talk starting in April and later of 89. And Eisenman turns to me and he goes, COAC, you are unencumbered, you're unattached, you should go to Poland, you should you know, help them integrate with the West, start a computer company, do anything. Nah, impossible, said I. And a half hour later, we'd worked together a plan, so I decided to go to Poland. And I spent most of 1990 in Poland trying to look for opportunities to start a software development company. That's a lot of the background I come from, although I did a lot of software development of networking tools. And while in Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary, I spent about maybe 6 or 8 months in those countries in total, I did what I could to help start up or help Unix groups in those areas, including by using their email a lot. It turned out to be one of the most reliable ways I could get to friends in the States, phone connectivity and prices being so prohibitive. By the way, as an aside, just to give you a sense of what it was like to do something in Poland in 1990, I think, at least I was told, that in 1990, around June, there were 16 direct lines from Poland to the United States. Now, that's direct phone lines. Let's think about this for a second. Chicago is the second largest Polish city in the world, right? And there are 16 lines between Poland and the United States. I mean, it's unbelievable. As an aside, that'll show you how hard it is to do networking in some of these countries. The policy of the PTT in Poland, or the telephone company in Poland, was twofold and very simple. Number one, have a working telephone system. And number two, don't allow people to communicate. This is the pre-1989 rule. And as you can imagine, it created all sorts of interesting problems. For instance, the system of exchanges in Warsaw was not fully interconnected. There were no islands that I know of, but very often one exchange could not talk to another exchange across the street. So at least in the mid-80s, according to Polish friends, the way that you got somebody together for a meeting is you sent them a telegram. It's not clear how much of this was by policy or by accident or by economic incompetence. Maybe there were just broken lines, but it was like this all the time. And at random, you wouldn't be able to call between different parts of town. Which leads me to a wonderful anecdote about networking. When I was in Poland, I helped to start at least the beginnings of a Polish Unix user group, which has floundered since then, I'm sorry to say. But while there, I visited a lot of companies looking at the possibilities of helping them get connected to EUNet and starting some kind of software venture. So here I am in this company just on the outskirts of Warsaw, which is very California-like. A lot of the people there are moving real fast. It doesn't feel like a regular Polish office. The average Polish office felt like a deteriorated version of a Mission Impossible set at the time. But here I've got this house on the outskirts of Warsaw. It's really neat, a lot of fast-moving people. And I'm sitting down with these guys explaining how they can use EUNet. And remember, I don't work for EUNet. I'm just wandering around using EUNet and telling people about it. And I've got their head technologist who looks like Rasputin. He's got long brown hair, and he's obviously been up for 3 days in a row programming something on a PC. And I say, it's real simple. All you need to do to get connected to EUNet is get some free UUCP software. It runs on PCs, absolutely no problem. You've got modems here, and just dial up to a concentration point in Warsaw, which we'll bring in, and then you can get and exchange your mail with the West to bring up a customer base, to do business around the world, and so on and so forth. And he goes, it's impossible. I said, why is it impossible? He says, we've only got one modem. I said, you've only got one modem. Well, we'll get you another modem. He says, it's impossible. I said, why is it impossible? He says, well, by the way, this is verbatim true. I could not have made this up. It's such a strange event. He says, it's still impossible. Why, says I. He says, well, we've only got one phone line. You've only got one phone line. Yeah, there are 40 people in this company. Yeah, we've only got one phone line. I said, well, what's the problem with that? He says, well, we have to use it. I said, well, use it at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. He goes, I can't come in every day at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I said, well, God, you know, put a calendar program in your PC. Have it wake up automatically. Have it do whatever he needs. He says, no. It'll bother the people next door. Why is it going to bother the people next door? I mean, how loud can a modem be? He says, no, it's their phone line. There's a residential house next door. I go, what do you mean? He says, it's a party line. You got to come in and push the button to switch the line over to our line from their line, and they use it at night. I said, okay, so you're saying somebody has to come in at night to press the button? Yes. I said, well, you got 40 people here. Just have, everybody's on a rotary. You know, it's one person comes in a different day. He says it's impossible, it won't work. I said, why? He goes, the lines are too noisy. And we went on like this for about 20 minutes. It was one of the most astonishing things I'd ever seen. And he was right about everything. But the thing that he wasn't right about, and I think he's discovered that since then, is that, in fact, things did change and you could make progress. and you could move things forward.
So it wasn't impossible. He was actually able to eventually get his connections up.
I think so, yeah. I don't have a hard confirmation on that, but as far as I know, he did. Just because in communication now with friends in Poland and other Eastern European countries, the telecommunications aren't wonderful, but they've improved fast, and you can do a lot of things. So it was just a fascinating experience of talking to someone who only saw impediments and didn't see solutions. Now, he deserves special consideration because, in fact, the circumstances were uniquely difficult there. It seemed like every time you found a solution, someone would find a wall to put in front of you. But, in fact, the EUNET model and the model of a lot of networkers around Europe, not just EUNET, is just find a way to get to the next step. And that's one of the really nice things about networking in general. It's full of a lot of people who are energetic, creative, and just aren't really good at spelling the word no. They just keep chugging forward.
Or yet, as it is.
Yet, or nay, or nine, or whatever you've got this week, right.
This has been Geek of the Week, brought to you by Sun Microsystems and by O'Reilly & Associates. To purchase an audio cassette or audio CD of this program, send electronic mail to radio@ora.com. Internet Talk Radio. The medium is the message.